In my study, among my museum bric-a-brac, cluttering the bookshelves, stones are quite prominent, of course. I don't have anything as spectacular as Jack Douglas, but they all have meaning to me. It's become a bit of a habit over the years to collect them on my travels. I can't think of a better souvenir of a significant place than a piece of the stone on which it rests. It's a pity about the weight, but at least you don't have to worry about breakage. My current favourite is a stone, a piece of basalt encrusted with a calcareous layer from an ancient shoreline around Lake Turkana in the Great Rift Valley in Africa. There's been a lot of interesting archaeology in this area of northern Kenya in the last 30 or 40 years. I like to think that some hairy little hominid foot once trod past this stone in some wild landscape, not unlike it is today. I've delved back into geology and its related subjects in my own projects over many years now. I did develop a love of it as a youth, a love that made it possible and attractive to come back to later in life. It's something that gets in your blood. The very language of it has an excitement. There are a few writers, not many, but a few that have engaged with this. Judith Wright wrote a couple of poems about it. Jack Douglas has dabbled in a bit of verse himself too. This is from his book, The Mesozoic Floras of Victoria. The dinosaurs came, the dinosaurs went. Just punishment for a life misspent. Consuming leaves in a manner colossal. Destroying plants potentially fossil. Gone forever? Nay, not so. Lying buried, I'll have you know, are myriads of fabled species, all entombed in extinct faeces. But geology hasn't had the sort of writers in Australia that have published elsewhere. The one that I know best is the American John McPhee. There's a great passage in his 1980 book called Basin and Range, and I'll just read a bit of it. This is John McPhee. I used to sit in class and listen to the terms come floating down the room like paper airplanes. Geology was called a descriptive science, with its pitted outwash plains and drowned rivers, its hanging tributaries and starved coastlines. It was nothing if not descriptive. It was a fountain of metaphor, of isostatic adjustments and degraded channels, of angular unconformities and shifting divides, of rootless mountains and bitter lakes. Thrust fault, reverse fault, normal fault. There seemed indeed to be more than a little of the humanities in this subject. Geologists communicated in English, and they could name things in a manner that sent shivers through the bones. They had roof pendants in their discordant batholiths, mosaic conglomerates in desert pavement. There was ultra-basic, deep ocean, mottled green and black rock or serpentine. There were festoon crossbeds and limestone sinks, pillow lavas and petrified trees, incised meanders and defeated streams. There were dike swarms and slickensides, explosion pits, volcanic bombs, pulsating glaciers, radiolarian ooze. There was almost enough resonance in some of the terms to stir the adolescent groin. Well, before we all get overexcited, I'll finish there. Basin and Range is published by Noonday Press, New York. So I'll leave all you field naturalists now with a little mystery sound.